First, Walt Disney's love affair with tiny Marceline, Missouri, population 2100 in north central Missouri. Walt spent only 4 years there, but they were formative ones that he never forgot. Today, the Walt Disney Hometown Museum is there, and a new American Experience documentary will air on September 14th and 15th on PBS that focuses on the life of Walt Disney, including his Missouri years. With us to talk about the wonderful world of Walt Disney are Neil Gabler, who's in the film. He's the author of Walt Disney, The Triumph of the American Imagination, which was a New York Times bestseller. He's a winner of a Guggenheim Fellowship, and these days he's senior fellow at the Norman Lear Center for the Study of Society and Entertainment at the University of Southern California. Neil, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Steve, for having me. I appreciate it.
Kay Mallins is also here. She's executive director of the Walt Disney Hometown Museum in Marceline. And Kay, good morning to you, too.
Good morning.
Well, Kay, let's start with you. Walt Disney spent just 4 years in Marceline from ages 5 to 9. The town made an enormous impression on him. In what way?
I think it's because we were the only time in Walt Disney's life he got to be a kid. His years here in Marceline were filled with adventures here on the farm. He knew everyone in the farm surrounding him, and it was that time in his life that he drew from the rest of his life. He attended his first school, saw his first parade, caught his first fish, went swimming for the first time, and he saw his first life stage performance here in Marceline as well. Mm-hmm. And I think it's incredible that it happened to be a traveling troupe from Stevens College in Columbia, Missouri, and they did Peter Pan. Huh. Walt saw that for the first time here in Marceline. So, of course, all of those childhood firsts would be something that would stay with you the rest of your life.
Neil, what would you say about in what ways Marceline impacted Walt's work over the years?
Well, there are many, many things that Marceline kind of embedded in Walt Disney's consciousness. And I think Kay is absolutely right. I mean, this was the sort of oasis in a very difficult childhood. He was born in Chicago, born in a gritty city that his family left because there had been a murder in the neighborhood, and his father Elias was afraid that Walt's older brothers might get sucked into this life of crime. So that's the reason that they departed for a rural community, and then they left Marceline after that sojourn there for Kansas City, where Walt Disney spent much of his youth. Also an urban area. So here was an oasis between, two urban areas. And it was a place in which he not only had, as Kay pointed out, a whole lot of experiences, seeing that first show, seeing his first movie, drawing really for the first time, experiencing the sense of community there. But it was a place that he always thought of as the best time in his entire life. Hmm. And, when a train would be passing through Marceline and Walt Disney would be on it many, many years later, he would actually dragoon people from that train to go out and look at Marceline as the train was whipping through, and he would point and he'd say, "This was my hometown. This is where I grew up." Hmm. Because I think in some ways, Walt Disney's entire life was kind of lived seeing if he could recapture Marceline.
Huh. Kay, tell us about the Dreaming Tree in Marceline.
Well, Neil just touched on that. And by the way, hi, Neil.
Hi, Kay. we go back a long way, Kay and I.
We do go back a long way. The Dreaming Tree was a very special place to Walt in Marceline. It's well documented that Walt's father was a pretty tough taskmaster. And so Walt would actually take the drawing materials that his aunt Margaret provided for him, and he'd go lie beneath the branches of this giant cottonwood tree, and it's where he really, really first started to draw. He would observe all of nature around him, and then he would recreate it. And Walt and Ruth, being the youngest of the Disney children, Walt spent a lot of time with Ruth, and he was her babysitter. And Ruth once told me that, having Walt for an older brother was just magical because he would draw her a picture, and then he would make up a right good story to go with it.
Hmm.
So yeah. Even as an adult, when Walt would visit Marceline, he would ask for time alone for kind of renewal underneath the branches of his tree.
I found that really touching, Kay. I read that somewhere last night in getting ready for today, that every time he came back to Marceline, he'd want to go out and sit by the tree.
He did. And, that's one of the most poignant memories I have of Walt. I was 8 years old the first time he came back, and Walt and Roy and their wife stayed with my family. And so I got to tag along on this photo shoot that the Disney company was doing for Walt and Roy during that visit. And we were actually on the farm, and there's great footage of Walt walking down to the dreaming trees, kind of swinging a stick and remembering with Roy all the times they had there. And I was sitting on the little slope that went down to the tree, and you could tell, even at 8 years old, I could tell that it was something that touched Walt deeply. And I think it was that springboard for so many of the things that happened. It was in this rural setting here in Marceline that he felt free enough to start drawing and to putting how he was feeling on paper. You know, Walt also sold his first art here to an old country doctor named Doc Sherwood. And so Marceline was a springboard, I truly believe, for all that talent that Walt had, and was encouraged by the local people here that they saw it as well.
Go ahead, Neil.
And not only, I think, a springboard for his talent, but also for a kind of ethos that he carried through the rest of his life. One of the things that he talked about Marceline, was the sense of community there. He loved harvest time, when the entire community would gather. He loved the idea that everybody was helping everyone else. I mean, this was something he carried throughout the rest of his life. And so Marceline embedded itself not just in the fact that he had all of these experiences and also learned how to draw there, and as Kay said, got his first nickel for his first drawing there, but also the sense of how life ought to be lived. And that was something he tried to bring to his studio. In some ways, his studio became a kind of miniature Marceline in its early days, because he wanted to recreate that sense of community, that sense of working together, everyone on a mission, a great mission.
Kay, that dreaming tree I read just died last year.
Well, it actually was hit by lightning several years ago.
And
we were watching the long, slow demise. It's interesting, though, that several years ago, American Forest Historic Tree Nursery, who collect seeds from historic trees all over the United States, came and collected 1.5 million seeds off that tree. And again, not knowing it was going to be hit by lightning, one of Walt's grandsons contacted us and wanted to do something here on the farm. So in 2003, one of Walt's grandsons and three Walt Disney World ambassadors came up and planted the Son of Dreaming Tree. Very close to the original. So it's wonderful. We have the Son of Dreaming Tree, about 50 feet tall now, still on the property. And in 2005, we presented Disneyland with a Dreaming Tree sapling that in commemoration of their 50th anniversary. And I'm really happy to say they planted on Tom Sawyer's Island, which is another great Missouri connection also. So there's a little bit of Marceline magic growing at Disneyland right now.
You're listening to KCUR's Up to Date. We're talking about Walt Disney with Neil Gabler and Kay Mallins. Neil's part of an upcoming two-part documentary premiering September 14th and 15th on PBS's American Experience. Our friends at the Kansas City Public Library will have another of the biographers from the film, along with a sneak peek at the documentary, this evening at the Plaza Branch. To reserve a seat, just go to kclibrary.org. Kay, he came back for at least three visits, 1946 to Marceline, 1956 and 1960. Tell us about those visits.
Well, in 1946, Walt just came kind of on his own. It was unannounced. He happened to go by the local Chevrolet dealership here in Marceline, and they, of course, recognized him. And he had his own little 8-millimeter movie camera with him. And what he was doing was refreshing his memory of his time here in Marceline. And last August, I was speaking at the Disney Family Museum in San Francisco, and they sent me this film to identify, and it was the film that Walt shot of Marceline. I hadn't seen it until then. And it was all the places that he held dear. It was the Santa Fe Railroad Station, where our museum is housed, where the Walt Disney Hometown Museum is housed. It was Main Street Marceline. It was his elementary school he attended here. It was the creamery where his mother had churned butter to sell. It was a Disney farm, and it was a dreaming tree. And when I saw that footage, it was like, oh, my gosh, holy cow. You know, we are celebrating all the things that he loved so much about Marceline. And we, and then in 1956, he came back to dedicate our Walt Disney Swimming Pool and Park. And, you know, that's a year after he opened Disneyland. He was really, really famous. And, you know, a small town in Missouri, rural Missouri, we had about 3,000 people then, passed a bond to build a public swimming pool, which was pretty darn progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were going through the plans, I go, let's write Walt Disney a letter and see if it would be okay if we named it Walt Disney Swimming Pool and Park, just hoping he'd say, go ahead. Well, first letter back, he was thrilled. Next letter back, were we going to have a dedication? We sure could. Well, he sure wanted to come, and Roy wanted to come, and they wanted to bring their wives.
Hmm.
So in 1956, they returned again. And not only did they dedicate the swimming pool, but Walt held the Midwest premiere of the Great Locomotive Chase here in Marceline.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was on that occasion, that, and I was in the audience, that he looked at all of us in the audience, and he said, you know, you children are lucky to live in Marceline. My best memories are the years I spent here.
Hmm. Well, I don't want to gossip, Kay, but I understand that Walt actually slept in your bed during one of those visits.
Yeah.
What about that?
Well, you've been talking to me for a few moments, so I'm sure it's not too hard for you to imagine. I was fairly precocious at 8 years old. And the Disneys were staying with us simply because my folks had built a brand-new ranch-style air-conditioned house, and our hotel wasn't air-conditioned. And the Disneys were coming in July.
Mm-hmm.
So city council asked my dad if the Disneys could stay with us. He said yes without asking my mother. And they were a young couple. They had spent every cent they had on this brand-new air-conditioned house, and the furniture was hand-me-down. So long story short, my mom didn't think she could do it, and her friends said, oh, you have to. You have the air conditioning. So they moved all my mom's old hand-me-down out and all their better stuff in. So that's how we met Disney.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, so I looked at Walt Disney and said, what room are you going to sleep in? And he said, well, what room should I sleep in? And I said, well, the pink one. So that's how my claim to fame as a child is Walt and Lillian Disney slept in my bed.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, Neil, the museum we're talking about here in Marceline could have been in Kansas City because of his ties here. Was there any thought about that, or was it always going to be Marceline?
Well, here's an interesting thing about Marceline. There was a point, as Kay knows well, when Roy and Walt considered building a kind of, you couldn't really call it an amusement park because that's not what they wanted, but it would be a kind of farm park. It would be an attraction, you know, in the middle of Missouri that people would come to, and it would be Walt Disney's farm with the animals and, of course, the home site and everything else. So, you know, they actually did think of this as a location that wouldn't be a museum so much as it would be a kind of attraction for people in the Midwest. But even though Walt Disney, I think, you know, felt his roots were in Marceline, you know, historically speaking, I mean, his deeper roots were in Kansas City. But I don't know that Walt ever felt the same kind of attachment to Kansas City, even though Kansas City, you know, had tremendous impact on his life in different ways than Marceline. But I don't know that he ever thought of Kansas City as really his hometown. He never talked of it in those terms.
Mm-hmm. He was in Marceline just until age 9. Why did he come to Kansas City, Neil?
Came to Kansas City because his father was a lousy farmer.
Mm-hmm.
His father had come there to farm. And, of course, as I said earlier, to take the family out of Chicago. And the reason they settled in Marceline, I believe, is because Elias Disney, who's Walt's father, his brother, Walt's uncle Robert, had bought some property there, 500 acres, in fact, as an investment. And so Robert Disney preceded Elias Disney there, and that's one of the reasons I believe they wound up there. But his father was a very unsuccessful farmer, and on top of his lack of success, he got ill, either with typhoid or diphtheria. And so the family just decided they weren't going to make a go of it. And so they pulled up their roots there, and they moved to Kansas City, where, of all things, Elias Disney became the owner of a paper route. And that's how he earned his living. And the entire family was kind of tethered to that paper route, both geographically and also in terms of their time. The entire family really surrounded
that paper route, which meant that Walt had to get up at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning to pick up papers and deliver papers. But that's another story.
Kate, Walt didn't want to be like his father. Do I have that right?
No, he really didn't. But can I address why the museum's in Marceline?
Yes, sure.
Okay, well, one of the reasons the museum is in Marceline is exactly what Neil was talking about. My dad was one of Walt's partners on what they were thinking of doing here in Marceline. But another reason the museum is here is because of another Disney family member. Walt's little sister, Ruth, had the same feelings for Marceline that Walt had. And Ruth was a friend of mine most of my adult life. And on one of my visits with her, she said, "Hey, Kay, someday I want you to have my stuff." And I didn't give it another thought. And after she passed away, her only son, Ted, contacted me. And he said, "You know, Kay, Mom wants you to have her stuff." And I go, "Well, what stuff are we talking about, Ted?" And he goes, "Well, come out here and look." So they started taking stuff out of the tops of closets and out from these beds. I go, "I'm way over my head now." So came back to Marceline and called some friends at Nelson Atkins and said, "I need some help here." So we went out with cameras and scanners and documented 3,000 artifacts that Ruth wanted to come to Marceline.
Mm-hmm.
So brought them back. Decided, wow, we need to have a museum. And we had a very rich story of our own to tell, which was well documented, and we had wonderful artifacts from all of that. So that's why the museum is in Marceline.
And maybe the most famous artifact you have, Kay, is what?
Oh, gosh. Let's see, my top three. The only ride to ever leave Disneyland as a gift, the Midget Utopia ride.
Right.
Walt and Roy sent to Marceline. The Mickey plush dolls that Walt and Roy gave their parents on their 50th wedding anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, I really like Elias's tools. Huh. He was a craftsman. He worked with his hands most of his life. And I can just feel the frustration, and I think he was a disappointed man with a lot of the things he tried in his life, but you know, I think Walt got to never given up from Elias. He never quit.
Hmm.
He kept going. So those are some of my favorite things.
Yeah.
Of course, along with, we have hundreds of letters between family members that tell a great story about the interactions of the Disney family. Okay, now what was the other question you asked me?
Well, about he didn't want to be like his father.
Okay, no, he didn't want to be like his father. I think he wanted to please his father. Neil, how do you feel about that? I mean, I really think he spent a good part of his life trying to please his father.
In some ways, I think, I absolutely agree with you, Kay. I think his father is a very defining factor in his life. But in some ways, I think he was very much rebelled against his father and wanted to annoy his father. His father was a very taciturn guy.
Hmm.
And Walt Disney, as we all know, was anything but taciturn. Walt Disney was extroverted and excited about everything and garrulous. And I think in many ways, he wanted to be everything his father was not. His father, you know, was just a very stern taskmaster. And Walt Disney escaped that. And in fact, one could say that he spent a good deal of his life escaping that kind of force, in the same way that he spent a good deal of his life trying to get back to Marceline and feel that freedom and that beauty that Marceline conveyed to him.
We're talking about the life and times of Walt Disney. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. Or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. You know, Neil, Disney's Laugh-O-Gram studio was at 1127 East 31st Street here in Kansas City. And, you know, it was his home from 1921 to 1923. Did he really get the inspiration for Mickey Mouse in that place?
I don't think he got the inspiration for Mickey Mouse in that place, but I think he got the inspiration for his career in that place. I mean, Walt Disney began his first company, you know, Laugh-O-Grams, in Kansas City when he was too young to legally sign the incorporation papers. He was just 20 years old.
Hmm.
And so if you really want to see Walt Disney's first studio, Walt Disney's first studio is right there in Kansas City. That's where it all started. Unfortunately, it's where it ended for him, at least as a young man. Obviously, it didn't end in terms of his entire life, but the company went bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And Walt Disney, you know, left for California at that point, and left very much feeling disappointed and defeated, and having to kind of pick himself up off the mat. But to think of a 20-year-old man starting his own company in something as new as animation, I mean, it suggests a lot about Walt Disney, mm-hmm. and about his entrepreneurship and about his drive. And that's where it happened. I mean, it happened in Kansas City.
Well, when he got to Hollywood, Neil, he was making shorts. What are shorts, and how successful was he at it?
Well, shorts are, you know, we don't see them very much anymore.
Right.
But in those days, I mean, there was a feature film, and then the feature film was typically preceded by short films. Cartoons, sometimes not cartoons. And Walt Disney made cartoons in Kansas City, short cartoons. He also made advertisements for movie theaters there. There was a theater chain called the Newman Chain, which Walt Disney made some advertisements for. So that's how he began. And he was not particularly successful, partly because he was not a very good businessman. And the deals he made in getting those early films distributed were deals that were terrible for him. And in point of fact, let me say that Walt Disney was never a very good businessman. He never really cared that much about money. I think this is one of the things that surprised a lot of people about Walt Disney when they hear this, is Walt Disney really cared about the art. He didn't care about the money. And Roy Disney, his brother, who became really the keeper of the treasury at the company, the businessman in the family, you know, once said that if it weren't for me, I think Walt would have gotten fleeced throughout his entire life. Mm-hmm. I don't think he could have succeeded business-wise without having someone to protect him. And I think that is absolutely true.
Well, then he made his first feature-length animated film, Neil, Snow White, a huge gamble for him. In what sense?
Well, there had never been a feature animation before. And, you know, now it's sort of commonplace after all the Pixar movies and
right.
and everything that, you know, we sit there and we say, well, of course we're going to sit through a feature animation. Of course we're going to feel emotions for the characters, even though they're animated and not real. But when Walt Disney made Snow White, I mean, the question was, number one, would people sit through an animated feature? Number two, would they feel anything for animated characters who weren't actual flesh and blood? Well, Walt Disney proved, number one, they would sit through a feature animation. Number two, not only would they feel for these characters, but they would actually cry for these characters.
Hmm.
It was a gigantic gamble, but it's one that paid off gigantically for him, because Snow White was just a huge success. Gave him so much money that it enabled him to build the studio in Burbank, which is still the headquarters of the Walt Disney Company. And the studio that he built, the buildings that he built, are still there as the foundation of the Walt Disney Studio.
And yet, he didn't like his animated movies to be referred to as cartoons. Why is that?
No, he did not. Because he didn't think of them that way. You know, we think of Walt Disney animations as cartoons that are kind of aimed for children. Walt Disney did not see them that way. He saw them as, you know, works of art. And there's one wonderful exchange that he has that you can read at the Walt Disney Archives when he was making Fantasia, where he gets really angry during one of these story meetings, and he says, "We're not making cartoons." And what he meant by that was, we're making art. We're making something that's bigger than a cartoon.
Hmm.
We're not just making things that are designed to make people laugh. We're making things that are designed to make people feel. Because it was always the notion in his head that he was making art.
You know, and along those lines, you say, Neil, that Disney's films were hardly frothy and light when viewers look at what went on, you know, in films like Dumbo or Bambi or Old Yeller. You also point out that Walt had a dark, realistic side to himself, which he was willing to admit, and he was insistent on keeping the darker elements in his films. Why?
Well, because I think that this follows from the same notion that he was making art, that he knew that life was a very dark proposition. He'd experienced that on those paper routes during those winter mornings when he had to, you know, trudge up and down the street through drifts of snow to deliver those papers. He knew that life was difficult because of his relationship with his father, and he didn't want to short pedal that. You know, he really believed that these films ought to address the full range of human experience. And when you look at, you've referenced some of these films, like Old Yeller, which is certainly not a happy movie, mm-hmm. or Pinocchio. Look at Pinocchio. Pinocchio is a very dark film. Snow White has its dark elements. Bambi, you know, Bambi's mother dies. Walt had a saying, you know, that for every laugh, a tear. And I think that really was a kind of guiding philosophy for him, that, you know, life is difficult, and these films are almost instructional. They're not just entertainment.
Hmm.
They're
yeah.
ways of addressing how we mature, how we grow up. And if you look at these movies, that's also what they're about. Almost every single film, from Snow White through Pinocchio through Bambi through Dumbo, is about how a young elephant, deer, whatever, you know, grows up. And what it means to grow up, and the things you have to experience and even sacrifice to grow up. That may be the single most important theme of Walt Disney's films.
You know, this was a man who was a perfectionist, a chain smoker, never satisfied, and all of that, you know, took an enormous toll on him. When he was at the top of his game, how hard, Neil, did this man drive himself?
Very hard. Very, very hard. You know, it was a 24-hour-a-day job, and he never let up. You know, Snow White is the perfect example. Now, Snow White, look at how many years it took. He came up with the idea for Snow White in 1933, and the film wasn't released until 1937. So for 4 years, Walt Disney ate, slept, and drank Snow White. He told that story, acted out that story, dozens upon dozens of times. You know, it was... Every second of his life was devoted to that. And, you know, in fact, it got to the point, and I always love this antidote, it got to the point where he was so much a perfectionist, he cared so much, that the animators hesitated delivering their drawings to what was called the ink and paint department, where they were kind of inked for the screen, that is to put on the screen,
mm-hmm.
because they felt they weren't good enough. And that Walt wouldn't feel they were good enough. And finally, you know, the edict had to come down. You've got to, you know, get these things to ink and paint because we're not going to finish the movie otherwise. But everyone was tense. Walt was tense because the ambition was to do something that was great. And that was the motivator behind Walt Disney, greatness. Not money, not entertainment, but greatness.
Well, we're going to have to leave our conversation there. I want to thank our two very good guests today for taking some time to join us. Neil Gabler, the author of Walt Disney, The Triumph of the American Imagination. Kay Mallins, executive director of the Walt Disney Hometown Museum over in Marceline, Missouri. Again, you can see Neil as part of the upcoming two-part documentary on the American Experience on PBS. It'll air September 14th and 15th. And more about all this will be at the Kansas City Public Library and along with a sneak peek of the film this evening at the Plaza Branch. To reserve a seat, kclibrary.org. Thank you both very much for taking some time. I sure appreciate it.
And
thank
Steve,
you,
thank
Steve,
you.
Very
We're
much.
Having the same screening tonight in Marceline from PBS.
Oh, good deal.
7
good
o'clock
deal.
At the Masonic Temple.
Enjoy it. Thanks, Kay.
Thanks.
I'll be there in spirit, Kay.
Okay, thanks, Neil. Bye.
Thanks, guys.